which acts as like a vacuum energy and cause accelerated expansion of the universe, right? And I think I briefly also touched on the fact that we have this cosmological constant problem, which in fact was originally discovered independent from knowing the universe was accelerated. It was more of a fundamental aspect of our physics than the observation. But then the observation enhanced the problem and pronounced it even more. So when people talk about cosmological constant problem, most of what they mean is two aspects of the problem. One is the related to the theoretical, and the other one is the observation. So the observation one, if you remember last time, I said we need some component of the energy in our universe which acts like a vacuum energy, and its ratio relative to the other components in our universe, which is mostly dominant today by matter density, is 0.7, and then, for example, matter is about 0.3, which means that the total energy of our universe makes our universe almost flat. So total omega is 1. So this, we can say, corresponds to the energy density of order minus 47. On the other hand, I said if this component is coming from particle physics, any like massive particle that we have in the universe, and the potential energies of a scalar field and so on, we expect contributions of this being coming partly from that. And for example, the numbers that one can estimate that could have contributed to this number are of the order of the cutoff of these S scales of these particles. And by that I mean, for example, if we are talking about electroweak phase transition, then one expects that there would be some contribution to delta of order of the scale of the masses of at the electroweak scale, which would be, for example, I think Higgs mass, and let's say in general it becomes 4, and if it's, for example, electroweak, then vacuum, one can say this is of order of 300 GeV to the 4. And then I say, okay, this is going to be 10 to the 8, 10 to the 9. So I think Shant last time was asking, so what is the problem with assuming that we just have a cosmological constant? What is the problem? The problem is like if you start, say, okay, originally your universe, it starts with some lambda, and then every time you go through a phase transition or symmetry breaking, then you get something which you expect to be of, for example, this order. And then in the end, you have to get what you're observing today, which is of that order. Of course, this is, for example, one phase transition. You could do the same thing around the QCD phase transition. You might expect something in grand unifier scales to be happening. And each time you go from one, let's say, one vacuum to another, you expect some sort of correction to the vacuum being added to original value. And these are generically supposed to be of the energy scale of the masses you produce over there. And that's why the complication is. So why you are adding so many large numbers, and they happen, they don't seem to be related to each other, lambda naught or lambda and lambda, I don't know, say something like that. But in the end, they cancel out exactly each other to this accuracy. And this is like, even before we see that, we saw that, we knew that, in fact, I think Weinberg first, before the observation, made this prediction, which was that, so we know that the universe starts accelerating when vacuum energy takes over, right? That was the point. And the other problem is that if universe starts accelerating too soon, then the larger scale structure could not be as effective as today. For example, galaxies could not form. So you need the time that if you have a vacuum energy, you don't want it to take over before the galaxies are formed. Otherwise, it just doesn't let the gravitational collapse to take place and make the bond system in gravity. So you don't want this to be, actually, I don't know what exact number is, but you don't want it to be much larger than one. I think it's of order of one. You must know already starting for, right? When the galaxies are starting to form, should be of order of one, redshift of one. So you don't want the acceleration to take place before the redshift one, which would be larger redshift. And that tells you, because you can calculate raw matter at that time, and you can say, okay, then that means raw matter at that redshift must have been larger than, or that redshift larger than rho lambda, which is a constant. And you know how raw matter scales with redshift, right? As you go back in time. So you put Z equal to A, for example, and that tells you what is the upper bound on rho lambda. And you get the rho lambda maximum, which has to be less than 10 to the minus 43 GeV. So even before people measured this, they already knew that there is an upper bound on rho lambda. And that already told them that there is a problem with the way the vacuum is canceling, all the contribution are canceling to be that close to zero.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, so for a long time people, I think, at least when I started as a graduate student, there were some hope that supersymmetry might help. But there is two aspects of it. One is that for me is, so what is it?
So you have different
colors,
like for QCD, for
mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Like for breaking.
So
but
you
is
first
there
so,
place for supersymmetry? Is there any place for supersymmetry?
Yeah, so at the point that supersymmetry is breaking down, you get a delta rho at supersymmetry. And the problem is that do you set it to z? You could say, okay, I set it to zero at supersymmetry. Then after it breaks, I get the correction. But you could say you have a type of supersymmetry, which it is of order of, then you get, let's say, of order of 10, exactly 10 to the 47. And then when it breaks down, you get a negative contribution, and the whole thing completely. They are supposed to cancel out each other exactly. But so you say, OK, I started here. But all the contribution due to different particles that happened, they were equal at this point. So then you get to the minima, they all have turned out to be the same. But it still doesn't seem to work out because I think there are, even when in supersymmetry, for the everything to be exactly canceling with each other, you need extra conditions. And I think even the optimum case, they couldn't get this number, 10, cancel out everything. They could maybe manipulating the different stories and maybe cancel out 10 to the 15 or some of it halfway through, but it didn't. But I'm not an expert in supersymmetry, so I'm not going to say what happened there. Okay, but the other way to go around it is that should I go through this now? Maybe I say the anthropic reasoning right here. Is that, okay, we know that if rho lambda was any number larger than this, the galaxies would have never formed and we would have never observed the rho lambda, right? We wouldn't have it. So by the fact that we are measuring, we are able to measure something, we already are saying all this must have been less than this. So if there was a possibility of this original lambda that we started with to take so many different ranges, then, and one particular example is, for example, in a string theory, that these days people have this landscape picture and they say, universe could have, there are so many vacuums originally. Not here, here. With different values of lambda naught. And each of them, if you universe start at each of them, you end up with different value of EF lambda effective. And if, since the original one is the number of these apparently is of order of some prediction of order 10 to the 500, and it can take very large values of numbers. So in the end, you also expect a large number of possibility for effective lambda. Okay. And you say, okay, out of all these universes, there are those who end up having rho lambda being less than this, and then galaxies form, and then somebody measures the lambda, and then it's measured to be some value between this and actually the negative as well. So it's no surprise that any measurement would maybe get you some number, and this is a number in between that number. So then the smallness of rho lambda maybe is not severe. Of course, still, I haven't shown that given that you are in this range, do we have a good probability to measure exactly this? But then I guess the order of magnitude is much less severe than before. So you can. So basically, now people who are doing this anthropic reasoning, they try to measure P of a specific lambda, assuming some sort of distribution of original lambda. they put some priors, and they say, what is the probability of P lambda? But also, like, then it becomes very subjective field, which point of view that, for example, now what is the probability of universes that have the right value and then get measured to be this? And if it's a good probability, you say this is a good model. So, yeah, but even, I think the point is even assuming this from here to get a good probability for this is not very straightforward. Because basically putting any statistic on these, if you remember when Louis was talking about the Turner inflation and so on, putting a statistical distribution for this sort of model is not that easy. Because if you are, for example, at a higher value of lambda, it means your universe has become bigger and expanded much larger. So it's more probable that you end up with universe ends up with universes that don't have any observer than those universes that have any observable. So it's still, you could say having a universe with this observable value is extremely unnatural. But anyway, I don't want to get into too much of this sort of argument, but one aspect of it is actually the fact that so they always end up having this measure problem that you might have noticed in their talks if you go to the landscape talk and so on. And the other one that is a problem is that we don't have any way of ruling it out. Because we don't have any way of measuring anything in these universes since we end up in the one.
Sorry, just a question. It shows that there's two faces of the problems. One is why the vacuum energy is not zero, or the other is why it's so small.
To me, it's that why is it so small? I mean, zero is still small, right? But the way I say it, the other aspect is the zero and the smallness is almost the same.
The question is that is the cosmological constant the vacuum energy? If it is, it's why it's so small.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. But then now I wanted to say there is another aspect of this problem, right? Which is, I guess this aspect automatically also comes out of here, right? So we know that the rho lambda should have taken over after this redshift.
The coincidence.
Yeah, the coincidence. But it could have also not taken over. And I think the way people usually put it is that how come these two numbers are of the same order? How did they end up being of the same order? But it seems like they are really interconnected, right? Because we have sort of, we couldn't have any value that would have become dominating before late universe. So it had to become dominant late universe. I don't know if I'm clear. So one aspect is why it is this small value. The other aspect is if it could be any value, why did it end up taking over at a very late universe? But I guess I ended up connecting the two, so it's not that clear that the two aspects are different. Okay, so let's get on with that. And I want to do a very brief, maybe, summary of different types of model or some of the models that people put in if you don't have this sort of model. So here we all assume that rho lambda is completely constant, and it comes out to be this. But now I want to say that what if there are some sort of approaches to solve CC problem without assuming it becomes this small, but trying to make the Einstein equation work. And let's see, how can I say it more clear? Okay. Let's put it back in the context of what it is that we are really saying is, so Einstein equation plus some bare cosmological constant, or something that we measure, let's say, effective, shows up in Einstein, is now the whole controversy arises because I'm saying after you quantize this part, you are getting contributions of very large order. And if this is what we are, gravity is measuring and telling us what it is, this one is much smaller than this one. So another way to view it or try to approach this problem is somehow manipulate the whole equation and say what we are measuring maybe is not directly related to the zero-point ground state of the fields that you put here and quantize. And as you can see, there are different ways you can go with it. For example, I guess the easiest way is that you drive this equation, this part of the equation, by taking the Einstein action, the gravity part of it to be proportional to R. Doesn't matter. Now, if I want to manipulate it at the level of action to get a different equation that does not give me this contradiction, one way to do it is to change this. Another way is to change this or come up with some relation between these. And these are the way that people try to choose different approaches to work out the problem. For example, there are these, they were these suggestions of instead of R, we use some function of R. The other ones is that you add some extra term here, some field here. The other ones is that you couple the two, get a scalar term. So these are called the F of R theories. These I call the general dark energy theories. And this one, the coupling between the two terms, are scalar tensor theory. Another way to go with it is to assume here I'm taking four-dimensional gravity. If I want to change it, I can start with some fifth higher dimensional, 5, 6, and so on. And example of that are DGP and like cascading gravity. And some of these approaches are going, actually this one I know for most, some of these are trying to say, okay, the, this one particularly is going after solving cosmological constant problem in the sense that we don't, this number can be very large, but we don't, this number can be very large, but we don't see it on this side. But these other ones, I think, are more into the spirit of saying why if cosmological, instead of having a constant that becomes dominating right at the right time, it has some dynamics which allows it to be changing, and somehow naturally it comes out to be dominant at late universe. So they're trying to solve different aspects of the CC problem. And so, for example, let me look at this one. Let's say, how does this one work? So let's say I put some very large vacuum energy on the right-hand side, but I don't want the gravity on the left-hand side to see it. One way is that I say, okay, the cosmological constant or vacuum energy is different from other sources of matter and energy in the universe in the sense that it is if I have different components that are changing in time, it's the one that is almost constant, right? And what we call it, the way you can say it is that if I write it in Fourier mode or even in real space, it's the one that is the most homogeneous on largest scales. Right, it's the constant part of all the energies in the universe. The rho of Lum vacuum. Zero, let's say, by dt. Zero. So locally, if I look at these other ones, the matter radiation, they are like this, some. But cosmological constant is something, a source of matter which is much larger than other scale. Or the way people say it is that if you write it in Fourier space at k goes to zero for vacuum, this is the conclusion, which is not zero. Does that make sense? Or? So, what now? Based on very naive or intuitive idea is that if now I put some rho v on the right-hand side of the Einstein equation, since it has some Newton constant, and here I have this, let's say, h, which is measured, the gravitational field potential that is measuring these sources, gravitational influence. If this becomes the vacuum energy, I want H not to see, the potential becomes insensitive to it. So if I had some Newton constant which depends on K, let's say, now I write it like this, so in Fourier space, if K goes to zero, we want Gn of K go to zero as well. But if I have, for the rest of the matters, I want G Newton to be the usual constant. So if I can come up with some theory that's on a scales, okay, on a smaller scale, which is larger case, it acts on like GR, G Newton is the same, But on very large scales, when vacuum energy starts to take over, it shuts off G Newton. Then it's okay to say, okay, you have this vacuum energy, you put it there. This is the zero point component of the energy, but it doesn't contribute to gravity. So I practically don't see it. So in effect, you want it to not completely shut out, leave some for you left to explain the today's expansion of the universe. So you want to come up with some theory that does that. And practically, people have tried to come up with this sort of theory. And one way they have been doing, people at PI have been promoting, is this cascading gravity, which is inspired by having some extra dimension, and you have a brain, which is embedded like this is a 3+ manifold, 3+1 manifold, very large brain they call it, and it's embedded to a higher dimensional space. And they say if you have at least two extra dimension, large extra dimension, then this will show this sort of behavior. But one thing that I like you to take away is that almost any manipulation that I do to this action ends up giving me some extra degrees of freedom. This gives me an extra scalar, a scalar tensor, the DGP, all this. In the end, you end up with this extra degrees of freedom, which effectively many of them act like a scalar, extra scalar fields in your universe. And that means you have some additional effects that could also come into become problematic. And for example, both these and a scalar tensor and f of r, they all of them give, you can effectively show that on a smaller scale have this extra scalar field, the same Bayesian quintessence model dark energy. And if you are not careful, this scalar field can exert an additional force, and you have to make sure this doesn't, for example, because this adds an additional correction to the potential, even though you were trying to suppress all the effect, this could still end up giving you a different force, which people call fifth force. Yeah. And then you have to come up with different ways to make sure this doesn't ruin the picture. And because you know, for example, gravity very well on solar system and in other scales. And the ways that people get around it, they come with different mechanisms like chameleon or Weinstein effect, which I'm not going to get into, but just give you the flavor of what is going on. Okay, so, but...
What about the free parameter of cascading gravity? It's too small, like it's fine-tuning is still there.
So, this scale, you have to tune. In fact, in cascading gravity, what you're doing by going to this extra dimension is that your gravitons are becoming massive. And that scale corresponds to the mass of the graviton. And since you want this not to be very small, the graviton not to become massive at a smaller scale, you set it to be large of order of Hubble. So you're tuning the mass to be. But the other thing I have to say is that, again, any of these things that you do, originally I started motivating everything by saying we want to solve acceleration, right? Being larger than zero. But when you do that, and because you are now going from the usual GR to a non regular GR. It means instead of, for example, having the usual relation between H square and rho matter, now you might end, so one way is that with f of r or dgp or these things, you effectively are changing this relation as well, right? Because if Einstein equation changed, the first order equation in delta rho and phi, the perturbation has changed. So you get corrections here. So instead of that, I have something like, let's say, which is now modified. And it's modified in a way that gives me that, which is what I want. I want to get the acceleration. But when you're doing that, you inevitably also manipulate the relation between the linear equation and the nonlinearity and so on, which means that if you go to second order terms and higher order terms, then they have changed as well. And most important one is, for example, the linear correction, which meant the metric perturbation on this side of the Einstein equation had some relation between the matter perturbation on this side. But when you manipulate these are also changed. So now I have these other functions, let's say P of phi, some Q of them, which tells me the evolution. The evolution of these has changed. And so even if you look at the observations that measure evolution of H as a function of redshift, which we were doing last time, like luminosity distance and so on, now even you match those, you might not match these very well anymore. So you have to also make sure, go and check what is the evolution of the perturbation, what is the larger scale structure modifications, and do they match as well or not. And this is, for example, one specific example is that even for the same expansion history, if H of Z, with different ways, I get the same H of Z, which gives me acceleration the way I want with luminosity distance from supernovae, I still might get different things for CMB power spectrum. Because now potential around the matter density changes in time in different ways. Okay. Right. That solves my. You could have, but how does that help me? If you. You add a table, surface term here, for example. Depends on what you're asking. For example, I know. By adding a surface term. Yeah, so what I know, for example, is of this modular cosmology. Is it modular? I think so. I don't know. The one that, for example, Lee works on a bit, which there, I think, he uses the surface terms here. Okay, maybe I'm confusing different things. But so the, anyway, the, I know then the cosmological constant becomes like a integration constant. And it helps you in justifying its naturalness. But I have to think. But the problem is that it might I see what you're saying. You're saying you might be able to change this But in the end, you have to make sure you are, have enough left to get, give you the acceleration.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm not sure. If, because surface, so what we want to be left is some constant here, right? From all this correction. So if I add a surface term, it might fix it at the surface, so help me in a way of justifying why this value is what it is, like this holographic cosmology, so I say. But so I'm saying it. No, it doesn't, but I'm saying it could give me a constraint equation.
Yes.
That tells me in the end
right.
It should be some. Yeah, yeah, let's not get into it because I'm not, I don't know, I have to think about it. Yeah. But at the level of equation of motion, I do have a problem. And if you don't even look at the action, you can phenomenologically manipulate this side or that side. But yeah, I don't know. You have to think, I have to think about it. Okay, so, okay, I wanted to go to one explicit, a simple thing together. So these are the old storytelling, just to tell you what is it, the flavor of the things about cosmological constant and dark energy. But now, let's go through one specific example, which is the simplest one. Which is that you say, okay, forget about the cosmological constant, all these corrections, the vacuum part. Assume somehow that rho lambda is not constant. And it is some function of t given by some scalar degree of freedom. Which is minimally coupled to gravity, and by that I mean I can say, and these are called usually the quintessence model. And the idea here was that if you remember back in inflation, you could get universe have accelerated expansion, evoking this idea of a scalar field and its vacuum in a slow roll regime. Here you say, okay, what if what is accelerating my universe has such a equation of motion and acts like that? And as I said, it doesn't address many of these problems, but it is the simplest way of phenomenologically analyzing the behavior of the rho lambda, if rho v is a function of time. And then people can go after observation to see how, if they can parameterize this and see what's the equation of a state of such a degree of freedom, if it is something like that. And so here you start with the action that has the usual gravity part, gr is there. You have the usual matter part. Simply, you're adding a scalar field. And its simplest form is it has a kinetic, canonical kinetic term, and a potential. That's the easiest first toy model, simplest thing you can do. Of course, again, there are another class of these dynamical solutions that people say, what if this scalar degree will have freedom? The kinetic part of it is not canonical, and I don't think we get time, but that means instead of here, you have some function of and those also give you a distinct features, interesting. Okay, since we have been through this practice once for inflation, tell me what do I need to get A double prime A being larger than 0. Let's see. So let's say at very large, at some point in the universe, this takes over this term. So it's sort of like inflationary scenario. Then the density of the universe is taken by the density in this field. And assume the field is homogeneous, so the spatial derivatives I can ignore. Then the density of this field is usually, if this is the Lagrangian, you take the, how do you calculate the T00 or the Hamiltonian? It's this, and this becomes phi dot squared. So that's V of phi. And you can calculate P of phi. To do it properly, you have to really go assume this is the Lagrangian, and T mu nu is take the variation of this G L matter delta G mu nu to get it right, but just intuitively. And the pressure turns out to be the same as Lagrangian. Pressure density and energy. So then this is just like a different matter component that I have in the universe. And so Friedmann equation now is dominated by density of this field, which I put as plus V of phi. And A double dot over A is minus 6 MP squared rho plus 3P, which is this plus this, 3 times that. How much is it? That gives me 1/3 halves. The 2 phi dot square 1 minus 2 minus 2 V of phi. Okay, so I know this is positive. I want acceleration. I want this to be positive. So this term and this time this is plus. So V of phi is better be bigger than this and be positive, right? Or not. Okay, so and let me just do W as well, which is because it's easy. So W is P equation of a state of this new scalar field is P divided by rho. So and we have, I'm usually for simplicity do this minus 1, and that's phi dot squared divided by phi dot squared phi minus 1. So if I divide everything by V, V. So you remember last time we said W to be have an expanding accelerated expansion, it has to be less than minus 3. Then you can tell me what this ratio should be today, for example, to have accelerated expansion. But in general, if today we think if we measure W, it's closer to 1, minus 1. And that means that if I make phi double dot squared over V smaller than 1, I get a good chance of W being almost minus 1. And if you're familiar with inflationary scenario, this is very much like a slow roll condition, which epsilon has to be. So let's do one explicit example, which I don't. Okay, I give you maybe just one example is, let's assume phi is some power law in phi. Phi minus alpha. I put 4 plus alpha phi minus alpha because I wanted dimension of V be of energy mass square. So that's why I call this mass to the 4 plus alpha. Because phi is also of energy mass. Phi dot squared is of also dimensional like V. So anyway, that's why I write it like this. But in general, a constant times phi minus alpha. So let's write the equation of motion for this field. Do you know how to write the equation of motion for a scalar field? You know. What is it?
This in terms of conformal time or?
Regular time.
This is plus 3h phi dot.
Mm-hmm.
Plus b prime.
Yeah, right? It's just the Euler. I have a Lagrangian. I get the equation of motion. Okay, so I have V prime, which is what? V prime is minus alpha m 4 plus alpha phi minus alpha minus 1, right? So this becomes phi double dot. Okay. Somebody tells me if phi is proportional to or t to the gamma, what is a and gamma? Phi double dot is. Oh, by the way, we have to say what h is, right, in terms of time. Mm-hmm. Do you know what h is usually? So before the scalar field takes over, h is in terms of time, it's always. One over t, right? Because before a scalar field takes over, it's a dot over a, and a is a power is usually some power law in t. So a dot over a is proportional to 1/T. So now before the scalar field takes over, I want to solve the equation. And then afterwards, use the slow roll to say after how does it evolve afterward. But in this case, so I assume it's some A times T gamma, and then I solve for gamma and A. So I get A gamma minus 1 T2. What? Help me out. To A gamma T 2. There's it 1 over T here.
Oh.
Right. Plus B prime is, sorry, minus alpha M 4 alpha phi minus alpha minus 1 is 0. That's, and this, sorry, this is not T. Gamma, and there is a A minus A. I think I need to. Huh? Oh, that was one over there. So what do I get? A to the minus alpha plus 1 phi to minus T to minus gamma alpha plus 1, right? So for this to be true, since time is, all the powers of times have to be equal, so I get gamma minus 2 equals to minus gamma alpha plus 1. That gives me 1 minus 2 gamma is alpha plus 1. And this gives me gamma is equal to, I did it right. This is minus. Minus comes here, alpha plus 2 divided by minus 2 this one, right? So it's minus 2 divided by alpha plus 2, and A something, let's see if I have written it here, right? And you get A alpha 2 plus alpha squared M. Now again, the coefficients have to cancel out, right? Huh? Here?
Yes.
Minus 1 plus, oh, you're right. So it's plus, right? And then A 6 plus alpha, the whole thing, 2 plus alpha. Okay, so I have a coefficient for phi, and I have a power for, in terms of time. Now, if I look at the energy density of phi, which was 1 over phi dot squared plus v of phi, the so the V of phi part is some constant times, it was this one, M to the plus 4 plus alpha, some constant, let's call it another B, times T to gamma time minus alpha. So it will be T to, this has to go to minus alpha, right? Minus 2 alpha, alpha plus 2. And the kinetic term is, would be, because this is phi, phi dot would be 2t gamma minus 1, 2, right? So it will be some other constant, t. Gamma minus 1 is 2 minus 2 goes alpha and right this minus alpha alpha plus 2 and then the square of that is minus 2 alpha times alpha plus 2. Right? Yeah. Like a squared. So as you see, both of them, the kinetic term and the potential term, have the same time dependent, which is of this. The power, so I can say the rho of phi is going as t to minus 2 times alpha, alpha plus 2. Which since I took alpha to be a positive number, because I should have mentioned that, because there was no point in, I mean the idea is that V of phi is some function like this, which in present phi is reaching 0, V of phi is going towards 0, but it could have started at some place, somewhere, yes, I don't know. But it's a slow rolling, the point is that it's a slow rolling today. Okay, so rho of phi is for this, if alpha is positive, it's going like this, so this is a number less than 1. So the whole number is, the magnitude of this number is less than minus 2, magnitude of minus 2, which means if I'm now looking at different components in the universe, what I'm getting is that I have radiation and so during radiation era, it goes as t to the minus 2. Usually rho radiation before, when it's dominant, it goes t minus 2. And at that time, rho matter is going as a minus 3. H is going as A minus 3, but A is going as T to the 1 half, so it goes as T minus 2 half. No, it has to be 2. Before the, during the radiation era, rho matter is always going as a to the minus 3, and t is going as 1 half, t to the 1 half, sorry, a is going as t to the 1 half, so it's minus 3. So, huh?
1 half or 2/3?
During the radiation era. During radiation era, a of t is, right?
Matter is 2 divided.
No, this is a still radiation era, but matter in the radiation era. Mm-hmm. But later, during matter era, now raw radiation is going as a to the minus 4. A during that time is going as t to the 2/3. So this becomes t to the minus 8 over 3. But raw matter then becomes t to the minus 2. And it's obvious, because whenever something is dominant, it goes as h squared, and h is 1 over t, so the dominant one always go at t minus 2, except for the vacuum energy, which doesn't, h there is almost constant, or it's not t to 1 over t anymore. And so, and we know in both cases, rho phi is going like this. So I want the universe to be radiation era at some point. So it goes as t to the minus 2 until it equates the raw matter. And then it drops faster, right? It's almost minus 3. Then matter is going as minus 3, so it's decaying slower. Then it becomes equal to this one. And then it goes as t minus 2. Let's do this later. So raw matter, radiation, raw radiation, raw matter. Now, this other one is always going like this, and but it's let's say if alpha is 1, let's see, the smallest that it can be, the it goes from, if it's infinite, then it's t minus 2. If alpha is 0, then it goes as constant. So t to the 0. So in it's somewhere between these two regimes. So let's keep, let's say, for example, I choose something alpha equal to 1. What do I get? Minus 2/3. And then if I start somewhere, let's say here, then it's going, but it's going shallower and shallower and shallower than this term, t minus 2. So it will eventually catch up with t, with the dominant component. And then it takes over. So obviously we don't want it to take over here, I mean to reach raw radiation here. And we don't want it to be reaching raw matter before the galaxies form. So you want it to happen at some late time, and then you set it, for example, to be of order of the TC being, let's say, of order of today present. I mean, redshift 1 to now, it becomes of order h naught minus 1. And then you go back and look at what the, and this, what would be the constants that let you do that. An interesting feature of these models is that usually the phi field has a tracking solution. So even if you don't start, notice that the solution that I find here, this is one solution of this equation, right? In general, this is a second order differential equation, so it has to have two solutions. And but it turns out this one is the one is a tracking solution. So even if you start somewhere away from this, this becomes if you wait long enough, you merge to this one. And okay, so now this TC, you can calculate it by putting the right constant here, which here I didn't calculate it, but you can do calculate B and C and put it there, and you end up with this. Rho phi is m to 2 4 plus alpha I equate this with raw matter, which is something like P square. Sorry, here I change notation to Weinberg notation, which is instead of M Planck, he uses G. Then calculate TC. When these two become equal, that means TC is M minus 2. And now I put it in of order of the present, H minus 1. Which means this has to be of order of H0 minus 1, and I get an estimate of what M has to be, which is alpha has to be G minus 1. So you have to have the right mass for this dark energy to work out for you at the right moment in there. Then after it takes over, I'm not gonna do the calculation, but you see what I was doing here. You can assume that it has been damped enough so that you can simplify the equation using this sort of approximation. And you can estimate how it's then now H, instead of being 1 over T, has to be replaced by rho of phi, which you know what it is in terms of V of phi. Put it in the equation of motion. So ignore this part by its Laurel approximation, and then this becomes a function of phi and phi dot, and forget the phi dot in that, and then solve for phi. And you get a phi of t, which is okay, this is phi t, but now what I want is really rho of phi, to know how is rho of phi changing after it dominates. And rho of phi becomes, just because it's phi minus alpha, so it becomes t minus alpha. 2 plus alpha over 2. So notice this is not anymore t minus 2, which was, I was saying that most of the time dominant densities have, since the h is goes as a 1 over t squared, dominant one component also goes as 1 over TS squared. But now we are getting a different answer. So H or rho of phi is not going as T minus 2 anymore. It's going as something, let's see, in terms of 1, it's, can I do that? Say it's less than, let's say alpha is 1, then I get alpha equal to 1, it's minus 1, 2 divided by 4 plus 1, it's 2 over 5, right? So it's much slower than T minus 2. So it's like this. And in fact, you can do, look at how A is changing and also calculate deceleration parameter and all the stuff. But I guess that will maybe just tell you what is, in terms of A, this becomes as A ln of A goes as T to the. Which is telling you that. So remember, if I had a Kosmorska constant taking over, then log of A. Do you know what was that? T, right? Because A goes as e to the ht, very exponential expansion, if Kosmorska constant take over. So here, I don't have quite that, but it's still like, it is large enough, which is, so if I calculate A, it's exponential of T to some power, which is slightly less than 1, but it's still growing with, the log of A is growing with time. So let's see. Let's, for example, let's put alpha equal to 1. Then it means A is going as 2 e to the t 2 4 divided by 5. Versus here, A would have gone as e to the t, right? So it doesn't grow as fast, but it's fast enough to give us. So the moral of the story is that we end up getting some acceleration at very early time, but you have to set the mass values in the right way to make it come to dominate universe at the right moment. And in practice, when people are doing in observation, the right way to do it is that to set the potential, and to do it rigorously, and then say, okay, what is V, what is phi, how does rho change, so how does H change, and do the observation. But people for practical matters, because you might choose the potential to be whatever it can be, you have so many options, they try to just probe the very late time evolution of V of phi and say if, for example, you can approximate V at very late time with some only linear Taylor expansion, and then go through this exercise from now to some redshift of 1, which is closer to us, then you get the evolution from the time it took over to today to present, And then you can calculate h of z or h of a the same way that we did over there. And remember w here. You can say how does w changes as a function of z in this regime. And if I set that condition for v and phi dot, then, and I make a measurement in the universe of h of z based on that, if, for example, the cosmological constant predicts w to be exactly minus 1, then I might get something like this, depending the value of v and v prime. Right.
Sir, but in the practical case, you're observing the omega, is it?
Omega lambda.
No, this equation is
stable. W, right. Yeah. So we measure W to almost today. We measure W, if we are lucky, we might be able to measure W dot and W double dot. So things like that.
So there's freedom to choose the right potential.
If I measure, so if I was able to measure, so what we are measuring is something very small area, right? If I was measured to able to measure and so on, I could reconstruct this all the way back. But we are far away from doing that. If we are lucky, we can have some constraint on this and that and then say, okay, we are almost here, and the delta may not change there. And by that, only maybe say what is v prime over v using the slow roll condition and this condition. Notice that if I choose the slow roll condition, phi dot is v prime over minus v prime over 3h, and that means phi double dot over v is this gets squared, v prime over there is this constant, v prime's not a square, and 3h squared is almost v. So it's v divided by v. There is, since from h to v, there is a m Planck here. So I get the m Planck square. There might be, there probably a factor of 3 somewhere. But this becomes v prime naught over. And if v is mostly dominated by v naught, this becomes almost this. But let's keep the other one. Just so at the present, that when I set the phi to delta phi to be 0 here, then I can say w at z equal to 0 is, this become v prime over v square, v prime over v square to first order. It's almost as if, it's v prime over v square, m Planck square minus 1. So if I see some deviation from 1, then I could say, okay, this must be due to some value of this. Now you can do the derivative of this and then get more constraint and v prime and delta phi. Okay. Maybe, okay, I have to finish here. I wanted to give you some flavor of that other form when you don't. You have a non-canonical kinetic term. Which here, right? How you get that one? Yeah. So maybe I just use the last 5 minutes to say what it is that we are doing in that case. So if instead of the usual kinetic term, you start with some non-canonical kinetic term, non-standard kinetic term, now your Lagrangian is sum P of, I call phi x. So you get some P of x and phi instead of just, the P of x and phi is not anymore just x minus V of phi. It could be some random function of x and phi. Then W, which is rho plus p divided by rho minus 1, in this case, will be, because rho now is given by, this is my Lagrangian, rho is phi dot rho L minus V minus L. So I can, and since if I have a homogeneous universe, X is phi dot square. So this I can write as, let's see, dl by dx, dx by d phi dot, which is phi dot, and then times this other phi dot, it's phi dot squared, so it's 2x minus L. And P is still the same as minus L. Let's call this minus so the notation matches here. So rho plus P becomes minus L, which was, this would be, now if I write it in terms of P, something. So I call this L, sorry, P is L, but that's right. So then rho plus P is 2x from L, dl by dx divided by rho itself, which is that. X minus L minus 1. And if I want to have an acceleration, that means I want W, for example, be less than minus a third, and let's say I want W to be close to minus 1. Then it means that I have to suppress this term. In the case of canonical, this dl by dx is a constant, becomes 1. So to suppress this term would be to suppress just so that if dl by dx is 1 to suppress this W minus 1 means x divided by x minus L has to be much larger, smaller than 1. And that can be achieved because this is phi dot squared by suppressing phi dot, and that's why we take the phi dot squared. So x dot going to 0 is when W is minus 1, right? X going to 0 is when W goes 1. But now you can see we have another solution here. To have W being minus 1, I could, if this is not a constant and I can allow for some arbitrary function, the other option is that dL by dx goes to 0 at some point. In a, if we have such a case, at some x naught, then I have another solution that gives me accelerated expansion, or W equal to minus 1, close to minus 1. And that's the idea behind using non-canonical kinetic terms, using a solution around which this derivative vanishes. And yeah. Okay, I think. This is enough for today. Okay.